You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
So I was on Mar the other night, Real Time with Bill Maher, Friday nights on HBO, and I would have given you all a heads up, but I didn't know I was going to be on Mar until the day I was on Mar. Montana's freshly reelected Democratic Senator, John Tester, couldn't make the show. Something about a government shutdown and a vote to reopen that government prevented John from getting on a plane. So at the last minute, Mar asked me to sub for a sitting U.S. Senator, something an openly gay man hasn't been asked to do since Idaho Senator Larry Craig retired. Now, most of you are going to need to pause the show and Google Larry Craig to get that joke. You go right ahead. I'll wait. Anyway, I was on Mar, and like every other time I've been on Mar, there was something I wanted to say that I didn't get to say because we ran out of time. If you saw the show, you might have noticed the moment I was spazzing out a little bit, letting Bill know there was one last thing I wanted to say, but he had to get to new rules, so I didn't get to say it. I'm going to say it now because it's say it out loud into a live mic now or keep blurting it out to every person I meet on the street. Anyway, we were talking about pot legalization because Michael Bloomberg, billionaire, former mayor of New York City and wannabe second billionaire president of the United States, called legalizing pot, quote, perhaps the stupidest thing we've ever done. Bloomberg feels this way because he says 72,000 Americans died of drug overdoses in 2017. And it's true. 72,000 Americans did die of drug overdoses in 2017. That stat is from the CDC. But if you dig into those stats for a split fucking second, you will see that not a single one of those deaths, not one, was marijuana related. Most of those deaths were due to opioid addiction, the opioid epidemic driven by big pharma and billionaires. Not one person died of a pot overdose in 2017. Now, a person can smoke too much pot, of course, but according to Dave Schmader, who wrote the book about pot, a person would have to smoke 1,500 pounds of pot to fatally overdose. Now, I'm no scientist. I don't work for the CDC, and I didn't write the book on pot like Schmader did, but I am pretty sure that by the time someone was on their third or fourth 100-pound of pot, they'd already be asleep or at Taco Bell or asleep at Taco Bell, and they wouldn't be able to plow through the next 1,200 pounds of pot that it would take to fatally overdose. Anyway, I spoke up for Washington State on Mar and Oregon and Nevada and Alaska and California and Vermont and Massachusetts and all the other states that have legalized recreational marijuana. The worst case scenarios have not come to pass. Teenagers aren't smoking more weed. Pot candies aren't somehow finding their way into the candy sacks of five-year-old trick-or-treaters on Halloween. Fewer people, particularly people of color, are getting sucked into the criminal justice system. Legalizing recreational weed is a big win. Hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenues pouring into state coffers that can be spent on things like schools and healthcare and roads. Anyway, here's what I wanted to say, and it kills me that I didn't get to say this on Mar, but the panel ran out of time. In states where we've legalized weed, recreational weed, politicians, mostly Democratic politicians, are moving to vacate convictions and dismiss charges for pot possession. As Jay Inslee, governor of Washington State, who also would like to be president, as Jay Inslee said earlier this month, we should not be punishing people for something that is no longer illegal. Employing that same logic, they're vacating pot possession convictions in San Francisco and Denver and New York City because we shouldn't be punishing people for something that is no longer illegal. But just as it's no longer illegal to possess pot, it's no longer illegal to deal pot, to sell pot. There are legal pot shops all over Seattle. It is now legal to possess large quantities of pot, no longer illegal. It's also now no longer illegal to deal pot, no longer illegal to grow pot. So if we're going to vacate charges and convictions for possessing small amounts of pot for personal use because it never should have been a crime in the first place, we should also be vacating convictions and dismissing charges for nonviolent offenses related to growing and dealing pot because those things should never have been crimes either and are no longer criminal now. So it's not just these misdemeanor marijuana charges and convictions that need to come off people's records, but felony marijuana charges and convictions for growing and selling. Oh, and all the people who had their assets seized under civil asset forfeiture laws or nonviolent pot crimes should be made whole. They should have their assets returned to them with interest. These politicians in states and cities and counties where they've legalized pot talk a lot about how pot laws, and they might want to talk to Michael Bloomberg about how this works, about how pot laws, possession laws, criminalizing marijuana disproportionately impacted communities of color. White kids could get away with things that kids of color could not, and that wasn't just on the possession front. Families and communities of color and otherwise were harmed by possession with intent to distribute charges and convictions, by marijuana sale and distribution charges and convictions, by marijuana cultivation charges and convictions, by hash and concentrates charges and convictions, by marijuana paraphernalia charges and convictions. And all of these people who were harmed by these things, by these laws, who were punished for growing and selling something that it is no longer illegal to grow and sell, they should be cleared too. Because like Jay Inslee said, gonna say it again, we should not be punishing people for something that is no longer illegal. All right, coming up on today's show on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast, you can subscribe at savagelovecast.com. Twice as much show and no ads. Andrew Gerza from the Disability After Dark podcast is here to talk about dating when you have a disability. And on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, all that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by adamandeve.com. Get 50% off one item and free shipping when you enter the offer code SAVAGE at checkout. Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's ThredUp.com/savage, ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, and to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a 30-year-old pansexual female calling from Pacific Northwest. I'm in a polyamorous open relationship with a 38-year-old heterosexual male, and I've been exploring the lifestyle for the last few months. We recently joined FetLife and all it has to offer, but I've noticed recently that my partner has been friending a lot of 18 and 19-year-old women, and it's been giving me a bit of the heebie-jeebs. I don't ever want to try and harsh as fetishes, and I've been pretty accepting of everything up until this point, but I feel myself reaching a limit. I understand that a huge majority of porn centers around fetishizing nubile young women and is a fantasy for a lot of men. However, knowing that my partner is seeking out that age range has really turned me off. Most women's brains aren't even fully developed until the age of 25, and when reflecting back on that time in my life, I just remember being really naive and was taken advantage of constantly. I'm also not trying to say that is every woman's experience, and I do believe that young women have a right to own their sexuality at any age. Am I being an asshole? Is this slut-shaming? It just creeps me out, and I don't want to feel less attracted to my partner because he has these desires. How do I get over this? Help!
What do you say to your 38-year-old polyamorous partner about him pursuing 18 and 19-year-old women, adults, on various dating apps? Well, I think you can say to him exactly what you said to me, and I'm with you. It's kind of creepy, and I think you can just put that out there, and you should, as his partner, particularly in an open polyamorous relationship, you want to know him. You want to know what he's thinking. You want to know what motivates him. And you also want to hold him accountable. And I think you have a right to go to him and say, you're 38 years old. Some of the women you're pursuing are 18 years old. It's easy to manipulate an 18-year-old. A lot of 18-year-olds don't know who they are yet, just like you said, frontal lobes not fully formed. And they don't know exactly what they want yet, and they're therefore easily manipulated. And it's easy to convince an 18-year-old that what you want is what they want. And a lot of 18-year-olds are really excited about being desired and being seen as adults and will work really hard to please adults who give them a kind of adult attention. And so you should say to your partner, say to your boyfriend, What are you doing to control for all of that? What are you doing to make sure if you're going to get with an 18-year-old that you're honoring Dan Savage's campsite rule, leave them in better condition than you found them, but you're also controlling for those dynamics, that you're not consciously or subconsciously or consciously manipulating this inexperienced, perhaps naive 18-year-old. And you should say to your partner, you have to set the bar higher for yourself. Okay, you want to fuck an 18-year-old? You need to make sure that she actually wants to fuck you, and you need to make sure. You need to check and double check and not just get enthusiastic consent, but get it 30 or 40 times and make sure that what she's agreeing to do is not just to please you, is not just to earn the positive attentions of an adult or some sort of affirmation, that 2 or 3 years down the line, she's going to look back on that experience with you and hate you and feel used and not good about whatever it is that you two did. So the onus is on you as the older and more experienced partner to leave them in better shape than you found them, which is why you need to be more careful. You need to do more work if what you want is to be with somebody who's that much younger than you. And you know what? It kind of indicts you. If you want to be with somebody at 38 who is exactly 20 years younger than you are, yeah, that could be a problem and could be a bad sign about the person you are, which is why I want to have this conversation. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? And if you're going to do it, if you're going to pursue someone who's barely legal, in the porn term used when they put people who are just 18 into pornography, what are you doing to make sure that you aren't doing damage? That you aren't going to leave someone in worse shape than you found them, even if it takes them a couple of years to realize that that's what you did. What are you doing to make sure that that won't happen? And it could be that what you hear from your partner is, hey, I'm not actually going to get with any of these girls. They're just hot. And so I friended them or sent them a message, but I don't really want to have sex with an 18-year-old because one of the consequences of having sex with 18-year-olds is having to talk to 18-year-olds. He may just be enjoying the pics without any intention of following through with the dicks. But yeah, jump in there. Ask him what he's thinking. Ask him what he's doing. And maybe he hasn't given it a lot of thought, but you're going to be the prompt that forces him to give it some thought. And as a result of the convo that he's had with you, he may think again. He may decide that this isn't something that he wants to do, or if he does want to do it and he meets an 18 or 19 year old who does want to do it with him, perhaps he'll do it in a more thoughtful and careful way and therefore be less likely to consciously or subconsciously manipulate someone or to damage someone. Did you know that on average, we throw away about 80 pounds of clothes every year? Buying secondhand extends the life of an item by 2.2 years and reduces its eco impact by 73%. This year, give yourself, your wallet, and your closet a fresh start by giving secondhand clothes a new life with ThredUp. ThredUp is the largest online consignment and thrift store where you can shop for high-quality pieces at up to 90% off estimated retail. They have, right now, over 35,000 brands ranging from Gap to Gucci. You can find a Coach purse for $10, Anthropologie dress for $6, and Lululemon tank for $10. Plus, if you go to ThredUp.com/savage today, you will get an extra 30% off your first order. Instead of digging through clothing racks, ThredUp provides the comfort of shopping online with the insane deals of thrifting. It's super easy and fun to shop. You can save your sizes and favorite brands and filter for exactly what you want. They have so many cute things and add thousands of new items every day. Look good and do good this year with ThredUp. Go to ThredUp.com/savage for that extra 30% off your first order. That's ThredUp.com/savage. ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth. I am a cisgender hetero woman living in a major U.S. city in my late 20s. I am calling about my partner's close friendship with his ex-girlfriend. I am so happy in my relationship, We've been together for 3 years. We've just made the decision to get an apartment together. We're moving in this month. I feel very secure, safe, heard, well satisfied in the bedroom. And I think the best part is both of us attend therapy regularly, and we've created this dynamic where it feels totally safe to talk about issues that bother us. And I feel confident that moving forward, we can handle the inevitable disagreements and problems that come up in any relationship. Except I have started to become more in touch with some anger and some deep-seated insecurity through individual therapy that I did not know was there until we started making all of these plans to move in together. These are all about his ex-girlfriend. So for more context, my partner has a large community of friends that he is extremely close with. They're even like family. He's closer to them than his actual biological family. And inside of this group is his ex. They were together for 2.5 years. They lived together, but they did break up about 9 years ago. So it's been a lot of time. They've dated other people in the past. She's single now, has been for a while, and he's with me. And I thought it was okay. I'm around her. She doesn't ever do anything wrong. He never gives me any reason to be suspicious of anything. Their behavior is totally cool, but it just bothers me on a fundamental level, I'm realizing. I feel like the triggering of her presence and her name just makes me feel like I'm not enough for my partner and like my feelings are not worth him potentially changing his dynamic in his friendship with her. I'm really conflicted because I feel like I have no ground to stand on to ask him to modify their friendship. Like maybe they don't hang out alone, but in groups, or maybe she doesn't come over unless he kind of asks me permission first so I can be ready for her presence. Are these things that I can do, or do I just need to like suck it up and be okay with this relationship?
You went to therapy. Good for you. You got in touch with feelings of anger and insecurity. Sometimes that happens. Now you need to speak with your therapist or speak with a better therapist. You don't have to stay with the same therapist forever and ever and ever. If you're with a therapist for a while and it's no longer working or working for you, you can move on. You can hire a new therapist. But you might want to start talking with a therapist, this one or some other one, who can help you take responsibility for your feelings. Your feelings of anger and insecurity are legitimate. The demands that you're suddenly making after discovering these feelings of anger and insecurity, demands on your boyfriend, are not legitimate. They're not okay. And you know they're not okay. Because at the very end of your call, you ask me if you just have to suck this up and live with it. And the answer to that is yes. Yes, you need to suck this up and live with it. You shouldn't go to your boyfriend and say, after all of these years that we've been together, after all of these years where you've never done anything with your ex-girlfriend to make me have to worry about infidelity, emotional, sexual, or otherwise, I now need, because I'm suddenly in touch with my feelings of anger and insecurity, for you to carve this woman out of your life or box her in a certain way, compartmentalize her in a certain way, because I'm feeling insecure. She is embedded in his family of choice, his logical family, this large group of friends that you are now a part of yourself. And it has never been a problem. They went out, they broke up, what was it, 9 years ago? They were together less time than you and he have been together. And it hasn't been a problem. Their relationship hasn't been a problem. And I really think, again, with your therapist, you might want to ask yourself, why now? Why are you making this a problem now? Maybe it's because the stakes feel higher. You've made a kind of commitment. You guys have moved in together. You have a lease together now. And maybe now that the stakes are higher, you've made a larger emotional investment in this man, a larger public investment in this man. The existence of the ex that he is friendly with, the ex who sometimes comes by the house when you're not there, seems more threatening, because a breakup now, after you've made this larger public commitment, after you've moved in together, merged your finances perhaps, would be catastrophic in a way that it wouldn't have been catastrophic a year ago, 2 years ago. Therefore, this threat looms larger now. This ex-girlfriend that used to just be around and you didn't really perceive as a threat suddenly feels more like a threat. But what you need to understand is, by making her an issue, by making your insecurities and anger some sort of force that you are helpless in the face of, as opposed to something that you can take responsibility for, you are bringing about the crisis and perhaps the collapse, the catastrophe that you seem to have convinced yourself you can control for by having this woman dragged out of your house or dragged out of his life, or making him self-conscious about his relationship with her in a way that you didn't used to make him self-conscious about his friendship with her. It all smacks of, well, self-sabotage. Also smacks of, you know, if we reverse the genders here, if you were a dude with a dick and your girlfriend of several years was, you know, had a large group of friends, and one of the people in that large group of friends was an ex-boyfriend, it was never a problem. And suddenly, now that you're in a committed relationship, you're making a problem of the ex-boyfriend in such a way that it could result in your girlfriend having to isolate herself from her friends, her support system. People would identify that as a red flag, not as proof that this man was an abuser, but as something that would need to be directly addressed to ensure that this man wasn't an abuser. And I want to say the same thing to you. You need to take responsibility for this, and you need to address this to make sure that you are not engaged in abusive behaviors, that you are not yourself attempting to isolate your romantic partner in a way that is potentially, if not at this moment, not right away, but potentially abusive. So you don't need to suck it up all on your own. We're all entitled to our insecurities. We all have insecurities. A lot of people are insecure about that thing that you throw out there, that phrase that you throw out there. I talk about it a lot. I'm surprised you used it without bringing up everything I've ever said about it. You say, she makes me worry that I'm not enough for him. You are not enough for him, girlfriend. No one person is enough for anyone else, emotionally, socially, intimately, sexually. That doesn't mean everybody gets to have a non-monogamous relationship, but no one person can be all things to another person emotionally, socially, intimately, or sexually. And so you aren't allowed to say to someone, you're not allowed to do X, Y, Z because it makes me feel like I'm not enough for you. You just have to accept you're not enough for that person. And they may need to reach outside the relationship for some other stuff that they need, not sexually if you have a monogamous commitment, but socially, emotionally. You don't want someone who has, you know, an emotional romantic attachment with someone that competes with your romantic attachment and destabilizes it. But you do want your partner to have friends, intimate friends that they can turn to for support. Sometimes for the support that you can't give them, sometimes for support about the relationship when you two are in conflict. And that can help shore up and strengthen your relationship. Our partners need people that they can vent to about how angry they are at us at times, just as we ourselves need those people in our lives. So just accept that you're not enough for him. And then you can have a conversation with him, once you've accepted that, about how to address your insecurities together. Like, say to him, suddenly she was never a problem for me, and now she is. And maybe it's because the stakes are higher, because we've moved in together, and I'm just feeling insecure, and I just need to be reassured. Not in the manipulative ways that you suggested, where he needs your advance written permission before he lays eyes on her, has a conversation with her, but maybe just verbally, every once in a while you need him just to let you know, like, hey, we were not meant to be together, me and my ex. We're friends. A lot about our relationship worked, but, you know, things didn't work, which is why we aren't together, and things work for us, which is why we are. And just every once in a while, you can go to him and say, feeling insecure about your ex-girlfriend coming to the party. And then it can become a ritual where he says, nothing to feel insecure about. Remember, I broke up with her for X, Y, and Z. And I'm with you because of A, B, and C. And that may be all you need. It's just that little tagging of a base to address your insecurities. What you don't want to do, And what you don't want a therapist to encourage you to do, I hope you don't have a shitty therapist, is weaponize your insecurities as an excuse to manipulate or control your romantic partner. You can take responsibility for your insecurities. You can ask your partner to be conscious of your insecurities and to offer you reassurance in a reasonable way. But you aren't allowed to, and you shouldn't, because it'll destroy your relationships. You shouldn't weaponize your insecurities in an attempt to control or isolate your partner. Valentine's Day is right around the corner. Instead of spending a lot of money, going out to a fancy restaurant, why not hang out in your underwear all night at home, cozy, courtesy of MeUndies. MeUndies uses the coveted micromodal fabric, which is 3 times softer than cotton. This fabric genuinely feels like actual heaven against your skin. It is impossible to get me out of my MeUndies pajama bottom pants. I wear them all the time. I am seriously in love with them. They are my Valentine. You can also get a style that's perfectly suited for you. Men and women can each choose from 4 different cuts, all of which are available from classic colors to adventurous prints. I am a boxer brief fan myself, although I have to say the husband looks pretty good in his bikini MeUndies briefs. This Valentine's Day season, because it's a season now, not just a day anymore, MeUndies will be releasing a new print every Tuesday. That means you and your loved one can chill in matching prints for Valentine's Day and play the game of how long can we keep these comfy, lovely things on. But why stop at undies? This year, MeUndies is launching their Valentine's Day prints in lounge pants and onesies as well. Both are made from the same micromodal fabric as their undies, and they are so effing comfortable. If, like me, you like the lounge pants and how they feel on your legs, you're going to love the onesie and how it feels on your everything. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, when you order MeUndies, you get 15% off and free shipping. That's 15% off a pair of the most comfortable undies or lounge pants or onesies you will ever put on. To get that 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/savage. That's MeUndies.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. I am from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm about to turn 30. I am a pansexual. I'm happily married in a closed relationship. And I have a party that I'm throwing, and I wanted to know the etiquette on party drugs. I am a stay-at-home mom. I have many friends in that community, and almost everyone that I interact with on a daily basis has no idea the type of sexual person I am, as I don't know the type of sexual person they are. So here's the thing. I want to enter my 30s on Molly. And my best friend's coming over, my husband, her partner. It's going to be great. Other people will also be showing up, something that I can't prevent, unfortunately. Do I offer them Molly beforehand? Or how can I say to them, I have this connect, but I don't want to roll with you? And I definitely am not inviting you to an orgy. Or do I just simply not tell anyone and we're all just rolling by ourselves?
My default assumption when I'm invited to a birthday party is not orgy and Molly. Molly, of course, is MDMA, ecstasy, Molly, nickname. My expectation isn't I'm invited to somebody's 30th birthday party. I will be fucking that person at that party, as will everyone else, because it's a 30th birthday party. That's not my default assumption. There's a default assumption that you benefit from in this circumstance. You say you're pansexual. You say you're in a monogamous marriage. Well, most people's default assumption when they see a couple that is married is that they are monogamous. And that default assumption informs them of something relevant to your question. And that is, I don't get to fuck this person. This person is a committed monogamous relationship. Therefore, my being invited to their birthday party, even if they're on Molly, doesn't mean there's going to be an orgy, because monogamous married people, on Molly or not, don't have orgies. I am having a really hard time understanding why this is a problem, or how you made this into a problem for yourself. You really have 2 opportunities here. And I think you need to separate the rolling with your best friend and her husband and your husband from the birthday party. You are going to turn 30 on midnight. the day before. You can be rolling that evening, the evening before you turn 30, with your friend and their husband or their partner and with your partner, and you can all get together at 6 p.m. or 8 p.m. and take Molly and roll all night long and turn 30 rolling with your besties and a big cuddle puddle on your couch on Molly without having to host anyone else. And then you can have your 30th birthday party the next day, the next evening. The neighbors and the normies can come by, and then you won't feel Emily posted into some sort of corner where, because you're on Molly, you have to have a big bowl of it in the living room so everybody can have some Molly. That's not how it has to work. It's not how it does work. You're making this a problem for yourself. You're engineering this in such a way that it is now a problem, and you just have to rejigger it so it isn't a problem. Roll the day before and turn 30 rolling with your besties. Then have a birthday party. Some people are a little down the day after they do Molly, so maybe the birthday party the next day will be your pick-me-up post-Molly. Or just postpone the Molly part of the celebration to another evening that isn't so high stakes. If you can't separate these things, get Molly'd later. It's not worth it. You don't want to be rolling in a room full of people who aren't rolling, who may have expectations. There will be times when you are down for the count. You will not be able to be up on your feet being a functioning hostess and birthday party well-wish receiver when you're rolling. Have you rolled before? Have you done Molly before? This is not how you should do it. Don't do it this way. Molly party, just the four of you the night before or some other night. Birthday party. No Molly, no rolling. Separate these two events. And happy fucking birthday. Free stuff is the best, but free stuff that will ignite your Valentine's Day is even better. When you go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item, you will get it at 50% off. That's amazing by itself, but here's where they load on the free stuff. When you enter my exclusive code at checkout, SAVAGE, not only do you get 50% off that one item, you also get 10 tantalizing free items. First, for your viewing pleasure, 6 free movies. Next, a free mystery pack that includes an item for men, a special toy for women, and something for anyone, plus free shipping. Now, that's a lot of free Valentine's Day stuff. So head on over to adamandeve.com and be sure to use offer code SAVAGE. Again, that's SAVAGE, SAVAGE, for 50% off nearly any item and a whole pile of free Valentine's Day stuff. That's SAVAGE at adamandeve.com.
Hey, Dan. I'm a middle-aged person, and for more than 5 years, I've been with another middle-aged person, a man who I love very much, and who's one of the best people I've known. And the reason I'm calling is not because of a problem that we're having, but because of a problem that I see elsewhere, and that is the way that people constantly heap disdain and judgment on men with small penises. It's really hurtful, and you can't avoid it because you never know when it's going to crop up. You might be watching some comedy program, and before you know it, all of a sudden some character just pops off with some casual, contemptuous remark about how terrible men with small penises are, and it's really hurtful. I don't know why people don't consider that the guy sitting next to you might have a small penis, even that nice guy, because there's actually no correlation between penis size and whether a guy's a good guy or not. But there is a correlation between penis size and shame because of the way that our society talks about men with small penises. And my partner and I had to work through a bunch of shit when we first got together, not having actually to do with the size of his penis, but having to do with the whammy that was put on him by all the shame he was carrying around that people and society have put on him for years and years. So I don't know if I have a question, really. I just wanted to get that off my chest because it's been really brutal for one of the people I love most in the world.
You don't have a question for me, but I am really glad you called. And I want to second everything that you said. I get letters from people, from men, not all men have penises, not all penises have men, but the people I get letters from about small penises tend to be male-identified people, about having small penises and about feeling terrible. And the messaging the culture sends them and the derision that they come in for, that men with small penises come in for, and the way a small penis is used as a placeholder for, really, for toxic masculinity, that you're running around Walmart open carrying and carrying that giant gun to compensate for having a small penis. People talk about the president having a small penis. People talk about small penises as if every shitty thing a man does in public is tied to that desire to overcompensate. And you can just infer from someone's shitty, toxically male behavior in public that they must have a small penis. And that ain't so. That ain't true. I've known guys with small penises who were great guys and liberal and progressive and not open carrying and not the president of the fucking United States. And some of them really good in bed. And yet it gets said and said and said and said and said. And if you object as a man, one of the things I loved about your call is that you were a woman making this call about your male partner. If you object to this kind of quote unquote humor, mocking people for their bodies, and you're a man, people will think that you're being defensive about your small penis. And so great is the shame that no one will stick up or push back against this, because no guy wants people to think, even if it's a giant penis, that he might have a small penis, which is why he's objecting to this shit that gets thrown around. And it does damage. It does harm. It does real harm. I've been writing Savage Love for almost 30 years. And sometimes I pull up a column or someone references a column from 20 years ago and I don't remember it. I read the letter and I read my response and I don't remember reading that letter. I don't remember writing that response. 9 times out of 10, I agree with the advice I gave. Once in a while, I don't. But I remember a letter from 25 years ago that I actually didn't respond to because I did not know what to say. And it was from a dad who was writing because his son, who had a small penis, felt so terrible that he was suicidal. And the dad did not know how to address this issue with his son and wanted my advice. And I did not know what to say. And I've thought about that letter once in a while over the years and thought about that dad and how I failed him and how I failed his son by not responding to that letter. And it's really stuck with me, the guilt about not responding to that letter, because I did not know what I could possibly say that could undo the negative messaging and the shame, the word that you used, caller, the shame that had been heaped up on this boy's shoulder by shit like, I don't know, remember the group, Don't Want No Small Dick. Remember that song when that was on the radio and playing every goddamn gym in America and restaurants? And it had done this kid so much harm. He felt so inadequate. He felt no one would want him, that he couldn't possibly be desirable or a good sex partner, because it all comes down to the dick. And anybody who's had sex for a while just knows that's not true. I don't have the study at my fingertips, but I've cited it before in columns, subsequent columns, where I addressed this issue after failing to address it when that dad wrote me 25 years ago, that show that people whose partners have smaller than average endowments report higher levels of sexual satisfaction than people whose partners are overly endowed. Now, some of the guys with giant dicks think that's all they need to do. Maybe they just show up with the giant dick and that ought to be enough. Isn't the big dick all you need? Isn't that the key to all great sex? And it ain't. And so maybe guys who aren't as endowed try harder and therefore do better and therefore are better at sex because they aren't just leaning on their dicks. They're using their fingers and their tongues and their toes and their forearms and their imaginations. And toys can also be put into play once you're no longer feeling shredded or insecure or just torn up by shame about your inadequacy. You're not inadequate because your dick is small. You're not adequate because your dick is big. You are good and loving and kind and compassionate and good at sex because you make an effort, because you care, because you try, not because you have a big dick or a small dick.
Hi, Dan and Youth and Nancy. Dan, this may not be a question for you as a non-pussy enthusiast, but I'm betting that someone you know or your listeners can help me out with this one. I'm a 39-year-old bisexual cis woman, and I'm in my first relationship with a woman. Before her, I hadn't been with a woman in 20 years, and the experiences I did have were only a few hookups in my late teens. I've been with this woman who is a lesbian for about 3 months now, and everything including the sex is amazing. I'm mostly over the low sexual self-confidence I had at the beginning because of my inexperience with women. I have one problem, though. She lubricates profusely every time we make out, like way more than I ever, ever have. It tastes delicious and healthy, but there is just so, so much thick-ish kind of stringy lubrication that sometimes it makes me gag when I'm first getting started. The last thing I want to do is make her self-conscious about it or make it seem like I don't love her amazing, yummy pussy. But every time, I just feel like wiping a bunch of it away before I dive in. Is eating pussy this juicy something that gets easier with practice? And is there some move I can make to make it easier on myself? Any tips or tricks? And would it be as terrible as I think to just keep a washcloth by the bed and wipe some of it away before I eat that beautiful girl out?
You're right. I don't eat a lot of pussy myself. Not a fan. But it seems to me that you should be able to say to someone who produces a lot of lubrication naturally because you arouse them very much and you take that for the compliment that it is, that you want to eat their pussy, but you don't want to drown. And you should be able to wipe a little bit of that away as you dive in and make more of it and then wipe a little bit of that away. Seems to me that 3 months in, even earlier than that, you should have, could have, would have had a conversation with your girlfriend about the logistics of the way her body works, which is not to shame her for the way her body works. You're not saying there's anything wrong with the fact that she's someone who produces a lot of lubrication when she's aroused. It just presents a little bit of a challenge for the person who's down there between her legs, gobbling her pussy up. You want to eat her pussy and you're being washed away by the storm. Yeah, get a nice cozy washcloth, something that's not at all scratchy, and have it by the bed and wipe and go and wipe and go and wipe and go. And I can't imagine that your girlfriend would take issue with that. She is, after all, getting her pussy eaten. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's look at some of your Savage Lovecast tweets. Emily tweets, at Fake Dan Savage, I am a first-time candidate in a local race this spring. Could you remind your listeners to also vote in their municipal elections? Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Of course I can, but I don't have to, Emily, because I read your tweet and you reminded them. Another Emily, Emily Glodzik, tweets, at Fake Dan Savage, have you heard of the new British show Sex Education on Netflix? It is hilarious and at times quite poignant as well. Hope to hear your thoughts on the hashtag Savage Lovecast. I checked out a couple of episodes. It is hilarious. Gillian Anderson is great. But as with so many shows set in high schools, I have such a problem watching 25 and 35 and 45 year olds playing 15 and 16 and 17 year olds. I kind of bump on it, as they say in Los Angeles, but I am enjoying the show and its sexual politics and its sexual bluntness and its graphicness. All that pretty amazing, pretty groundbreaking. Good show. Check it out on Netflix. And the Australian centrist tweets, in response to the girl whose partner wants to change her tampon, I was in a relationship like that 10 years ago, and the reason was codependence. We were needy and wanted to share everything and not keep anything to ourselves. Poor boundaries. Hashtag regret. Don't think that one needs any comment from me. Finally, Kevin Pelrine tweets, I wonder how many hashtag Savage Lovecast listeners have ever actually played Yahtzee. Yahtzee. I use that as an expression sometime. It means you win. Yahtzee. Maybe I'm dating myself as a Gen Xer slash boomer from way back in the day, but Yahtzee is a game people play. Do people still play Yahtzee? If you don't know, if you're not familiar with Yahtzee, you can Google Yahtzee just like you Googled earlier in the show, Larry Craig. All right, if you want me to read your tweets about the Lovecast on the Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag SavageLovecast when you tweet about the show. And now, some response calls.
Hey, Dan. I'm calling in response to the father whose 14-year-old daughter was caught using his wife's toys. Now, you can have a really awkward conversation with her about her needing her own sex toys, which is fine. Or you can do what happened to me. I'm an old pro. I'm 30 years old. I've been masturbating since I was 12, so it was the year 2000. My mom would get like those little massagers that are in the checkout part of the cashier area. You know, you're standing in line, you're about to check out. There's like dollar bin stuff there. There's gum. There's whatever. And there's these little back massagers. I didn't use them for my back. I use them for other things, and you can casually be like, oh, hey, I got an electric massager for your back and your shoulders. Here you go, kid. Knock yourself out. De-stress. And you know what she's going to use that for? Exactly. You live, you learn. So that's what I do. And then I'd put your wife's sex toys in a place that has a lock and key.
This is for the caller in episode 639 with a shriveled nutsack of a new boyfriend who can't tell her the truth about why he wants to help her with her tampon. You don't say how old you are and you don't say how old he is. This might be excusable if he was maybe a teenager or maybe in his very early 20s. But if you've been listening to the Lovecast for 10 years, you're probably in your mid to late 20s at least. And I'm here to tell you, dump this guy. When people tell you who they are, listen, this guy is telling you he's either A, a coward, or B, a manipulative shit, or maybe both. You should just be able to ask for what you want. And he's pulling the shit that dudes have been pulling for millennia on women. Oh, it'll bring us closer together. Tell him to go change his own tampon.
Hi, this is a comment in response to the lady on episode 639 whose boyfriend was interested in getting closer with her by taking out her tampon. The whole time I'm listening to that, I'm saying, no, it's an absolute fetish. Not a super common one, but one that I am very familiar with. I have been friends over a year with a guy online, and we met talking about different kinks, and I've always been very comfortable with my period, and it's kind of a deal breaker for me if a guy won't have sex with me on my period. But anyway, he slowly opened up to me about his different kinks, and one of them was being really into me when I'm on my period, playing with myself, sending him videos, pictures, state of my underwear, my tampon, anything like that. And I must say that not only has it made me feel more confident in myself, because ordinarily women are made to feel like they're not incredibly sexy or attractive or wanted when they're on their period and going through something like that. So to have somebody kind of fetishize that aspect of my life was really hot and a big turn on for me. And it's actually become one of my kinks. So my advice, if you're open to it, is let him live this out. I think it's really healthy and fun, and it can be a lot of fun for you. Good luck.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. The 2019 Hump Film Festival tour begins this week. The first few stops for my Dirty Movie Film Festival are Albuquerque, Palm Springs, Bellingham, and Los Angeles. Go to humpfilmfest.com to get your tickets and find out when Hump is coming to Hump, a city near you. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Adam Gerza on Twitter at @DisAfterDarkPod. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.